I don't see anything that could stand in our way.
Sanity, reality, the laws of physics.
Gonna step up to the microphone.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I am Sleepy Gilbert.
It has been a long couple of days. We've been puppy training. Well, you've been bearing the brunt of the puppy training here in the bunker.
Well, you know, I have to. I'm home all day long, and you're over there bearing the brunt of the, the money-earning end of the operation.
And what's her name? Java.
Java. Java Jive, JavaScript.
Yes, is enjoying
Java the pup.
Java the pup. That's pretty much it. She thinks of herself in that way. She's kind of an interesting little stubby legged little fur ball, and sort of like bears, you know, have legs that really are a lot shorter for their bodies than they ought to be.
She
tries to
hamster.
Rise up on a like a giant mutant killer hamster.
Except instead of round ears, they're those little triangular shaped ears that dachshunds have.
Yeah. Well, watch out. Don't stay near the rolling office chair. That's a bad idea. Because if I move, you're going to be squished. Well, it is just past 7 o'clock Bunker Standard Time, which is, of course, about 0100 Greenwich Mean Time. This is Friday, February the 24th, and we have much to discuss.
We do. So many things. And I missed last night. I listened to you. You did a great job while I was upstairs sleeping.
I realized, you know, I joked about missing half my brain, but it's really funny. We talked about this earlier, that I spent 13 years in radio. Most of that time, especially after I graduated from college, spending 6 days a week, 4 to 6 hours a day in a room talking into a microphone, you know, usually during doing music and stuff, but usually it was on my own. I did not do a team show or, you know, share with a co-partner or anything like that.
Yeah, it's a whole different dynamic.
Right. And I've just gotten so used to working with you over the last year or so. Last night was really hard. I kept waiting for the other half of my brain to kick in and finish my sentences or come up with something clever to say when I ran out of ideas, and it just wasn't happening. So we're glad that you're listening tonight, now that both halves of the Gilbert Hive Mind are together.
Join us.
So here's what we've got on the table today. Of course, more flap about Dubai Ports World and the purchase of P&O, the P&O line.
Yeah, you know what? This story, it's so funny. I was telling you earlier that I keep seeing all these talking heads on television during the day that are essentially trying to brush this under the rug. Nothing to see here. This is just all about nothing. Much ado about nothing.
Well, I think if nothing else, it proves that the American public isn't as stupid as the politicians would like to think we are.
Yeah.
Because we've been paying attention over the last 4+ years while they've been telling us we need to crack down against the Islamic terror groups, and suddenly,
let me just say this about the American public.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a nebulous sort of term.
Right.
The American public.
Right, because it's right.
Yeah,
a lot
it's
of groups, subgroups inside that Venn diagram of there's a lot of smaller balloons in there.
There's Vin Diesel in there, too.
Yeah.
When you speak of the American public, I think most people think, well, you know, Heartland America, they're just like, or the coasts or whatever, or even all the people that are watching news. No, I think in this case, it's the bloggers. That's my guess.
Mm-hmm.
Because the media wasn't making a great deal out of it until the blogosphere got involved.
What's really interesting, though, is that the guy who really got the ball rolling is one of the primo neocons, Frank Gaffney.
Isn't that odd?
Yeah. He was the first one who jumped out on this, and at least among the so-called mainstream media,
right,
and published an article, an op-ed piece, which was picked up, where is he, National Review, I guess, is where he's a contributing editor.
Uh-huh.
And he's one of the guys who was very influential in the early neocon movement in you know, writing influential opinion pieces, and he's got a think tank that's devoted to policy, mm-hmm. and has a reputation of being a real hawk,
mm-hmm.
and very, you would think then, in very supportive of this administration, which is, let's face it, dominated by neocons.
Oh, yeah. So, and then now Chuck Schumer is involved. And Hillary Clinton, of course, is involved. And lots of congresspeople are starting to catch on that, you know what, this story might just have the weight they need
mm-hmm.
to tip the election this year.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Because it involves George Bush being friendly with Arabs. And, of course, we know, well, at least politically, they know that they can tie this to the close relationship between the Bush family and the Saudis.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Saudis and the UAE, it's not quite the same royal family, but again, they think that they can spin it that way in the media. That's what they'll try to do.
That's true. Let me tell you what the funny take on that, if you're going to bring the Saudis in. Story came out today on Fox News that Al-Qaeda does not want UAE to take over the ports.
Really? And why is that?
I don't know, but if Al-Qaeda doesn't want it,
mm-hmm.
then it must be something that's good for America. Therefore,
mm-hmm.
we need to
make sure that this gets pushed through.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we've done a little background on this, and just throw a few more details out there that the mainstream media isn't making a whole lot of fuss about. That is an interesting spin, by the way.
Isn't that, you
know, Al-Qaeda
funny?
Doesn't want it because they know that those UAE guys are really tough on Al-Qaeda. Tough on terror. The story has been put out that it was 6 ports affected by this deal. 6 ports on the East Coast. New Jersey, Newark, which mm-hmm. is a big container port. The passenger port of New York. Philadelphia, Baltimore, big container ports. Miami, a big container port. And, of course, New Orleans, which is the premier port for American farmers in the Midwest trying to ship grain to foreign markets.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, we noted that Northeast Intelligence Network said, no, it's 8 ports, which includes Beaumont and Corpus Christi. Those 2 ports handle a lot of heavy military hardware shipping overseas.
Right.
Comes word today, thanks to Doug Hagman at the Northeast Intelligence Network, that it's actually 21 ports. Basically, every major seaport from Corpus Christi to Portland, Maine. Now, the only ones that I don't see on this list are the ports along Georgia and the Carolinas. We don't have Charleston, Savannah, Jacksonville, which isn't a huge port. But from Norfolk up to Portland, you've got Wilmington, Delaware in there, Camden, New Jersey, as well as Newark, Davisville, the port of Boston, and Portland, Maine. And then in the Gulf Coast, you've got most of the major ports there from Gulfport on over. Gulfport, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, Lake Charles, Port Arthur, Beaumont, Houston, Galveston, Freeport. Basically, everyone that got whammed by a hurricane last year, all of those are connected to this deal between Dubai Ports World and the P&O line.
That's really interesting. You know, this makes, we've said this before, this really, really does make me very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
excuse me, for some reason my voice has been kind of weird. Maybe it's, you know,
lack of sleep.
It really isn't an anti-Arab sentiment.
No.
It is simply, look, it's the same kind of argument I would make about profiling at the airport.
Mm-hmm.
If most of the terrorists, as you call them, come from Middle Eastern countries,
mm-hmm.
then don't, you know, look at the Norwegian granny coming through the line.
Right, which is why I got really cheesed about that case up in Wisconsin where the lady was really rudely handled by an airport inspector at the Appleton-Oshkosh Airport.
Mm-hmm.
And when she objected, they slapped her with federal charges.
Yeah.
And found her guilty.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really annoying. Come on, you got a 63-year-old retired school teacher from
mm-hmm.
Appleton, Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
and she... Let's get real. Let's mm-hmm. be sensible about
it's
this.
It's like a Monty Python sketch.
It is. It's like I said the other night. It's like this bizarro world alternate universe that we've somehow slipped into, and we need to figure out how to get back. It's the same reason we get upset reading about the incursions across the southern border by people dressed as Mexican military, possibly
mm-hmm.
Mexican military themselves. Frankly, the drug lords pay better than the Mexican government does.
Mm-hmm.
Well, than any government would, let's put it Let's be honest.
Yeah.
But if we're serious about the war on terror, if we're supposed to take this seriously and put up with these intrusions into our private lives, mm-hmm. where the FBI can subpoena, they don't need to subpoena, the FBI can access an awful lot of personal information on us without a warrant and without any kind of judicial oversight.
Oh, yeah.
As part of the war on terror, well, show me, federal government, that you're doing something about our weakest link, which is the undefended southern border.
Sorry, honey. There's pitiful
whimpering sounds.
Coming from the background. It's not. I'm not doing it.
I know. Yeah,
she's
Jabba
trying
was
to
upset.
Get at your feet, and
these leather laces on the moccasins I'm wearing today are so alluring, mm-hmm. and I happened to cross my feet in such a way that she couldn't get at them. So anyway, that's why we're kind of cheesed off about this. We are expected to put up with all kinds of intrusions into our personal lives. I mean, to the point where your home can be searched without you knowing about it, without mm-hmm. the police or FBI having to notify you. And yet, we're willing to turn over control of 21 of our container ports. You know, basically everything from the Mexican border to the Canadian border on the east side of the country to a foreign government from a part of the world in which resides our enemy, supposedly.
Not
allegedly.
Only that, but if I remember correctly, the UAE is on the list of places that American citizens are warned about visiting because of possible terrorist activities, mm-hmm. terrorist events that may take place there.
Now, Dubai is really a jewel
in the
Middle East.
It really is.
It's a very modern, very clean, very safe city. It's basically the banking hub for the Middle East, mm-hmm. which would explain why charges that some of the terrorist money was laundered through Dubai mm-hmm. make sense. That's where all the banks are.
Yeah.
You know, it's like saying, you know, gangster money or whatever, illicit funds somehow wound up in a bank in the Cayman Islands or in Switzerland. Well, that's where the mm-hmm. banks are.
Yeah.
It's not a slap at Dubai. It's not a slap at the Emir. It just, again, if we're supposed to take this war on terror seriously, the government's actions don't make any sense.
Right. At the very least, it looks fishy, especially when you consider that the United Arab Emirates donated $100 million toward Katrina relief.
Interesting.
Didn't you read that upstairs when we were looking up
stuff?
Well,
yeah, I was trying to get to that story. That was on a progressive blog, but when I tried to access the page, it was missing, so I don't have any details on that story, just a headline.
Missing, eh?
Yeah. What I think was more interesting was the story that I mentioned last night that, again, came from the
Here we go. This is from today.
Okay.
From AP. The United Arab Emirates gave the Bush administration $100 million to help victims of Hurricane Katrina just weeks before a state-owned company there sought U.S. approval for its ports deal.
Just weeks before it sought approval for the ports deal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that is interesting. Very interesting. The story last night that Sean Osborne at Northeast Intelligence Network picked up on, I thought was very interesting, that in the several weeks after the attack on 9/11, a CIA Predator drone apparently had a bead on bin Laden, or they knew where he was, but they opted not to proceed with a strike because about half of the UAE's royal family was with bin Laden at the time in Afghanistan.
Which may be why Al-Qaeda does not want him involved in the ports. Look, you guys are always targeting us and... excuse me, Al-Qaeda, that makes no sense. Look over there! Yoink!
Well, we did a little more background on this deal, and you know we're not thoroughly versed in this, but apparently there was a bidding war between Dubai Ports World and a company from Singapore for the assets and the port access that is owned by P&O. The company in Singapore was trying to expand its reach into India. Apparently, the P&O has several ports or has operations at several ports in India, which is a growing market. The economy there is going to be like China's has been the last couple of years. India mm-hmm. is following right behind. And they've got almost as many people. So India is going to be a a major player in the world. In fact, a guy from India named Mittal, if I'm not mistaken, M-I-T-T-A-L, is now, like the number two steel. He's got control of like the second most steel production in the world or something like that.
Wow.
Right now. Yeah, just out of nowhere over the last 5 years, this guy has bought up all these steel mills all over the world. So India is going to be a major player. And both P&O and Dubai Ports World wanted to get their hooks into that continent or subcontinent, as well as the ports on the eastern half of the United States. So a bidding war was taking place the last half of January that, of course, most of us knew nothing about until suddenly
right.
we found out, oh, wait a minute, that means we're selling off control of our ports to a foreign country.
Uh-huh.
Well, the thing is, and, you know, our first reaction was, well, maybe this company in Singapore would be a better fit for, you know, whatever. Not like it's the American government's decision as to who actually buys P&O. I mean, that's up to the board of directors of P&O.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can at least say, well, sorry, but we can't let you have control over the ports on our shores.
Yeah.
But apparently this company in Singapore is tied to Hutchison Whampoa, a big shipping company based out of China with ties to the Chinese military.
Yeah.
And that, if I'm not mistaken, Hutchison Whampoa is the company that's got the big shipyards on either end of the Panama Canal now. As well as the big yard next to the port of Long Beach.
That explains a lot.
Yeah.
Because Jimmy Carter, who is very, very critical of the Bush administration, has come out saying, I don't know why everybody's giving this a problem. This sounds like a good deal to me. Well, let me say one more thing on this article that I found, and I'll post this to Watcher Magazine, the one from today about the $100 million. If you're thinking, well, you know, that's a lot of money, but then, you know, Katrina was huge. And, and no, the entire sum from all international donations was $126 million.
Really? So UAE
$100 million of it came
from
the
UAE. Well, that is very interesting.
And, records show, this is quoting this story, records show the UAE and one of its sheikhs contributed to at least $1 million before 1995 to the Bush Library Foundation.
Oh, okay. That is very interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah.
I did a quick search on Hutchison Whampoa. They do not operate any port facilities in the United States at this time. They do, however, have those facilities at either end of the Panama Canal. They own and operate a number of port facilities in Mexico, five of them, as well as in Argentina and Brazil.
Well, I would venture to say that 5-10 years from now, it will all be the same thing. If certain organizations have their way, I mean, again, if you go to northcom.mil, you see that our military is in charge of Canada, United States, and Mexico.
Yeah, that is their operating theater. So, and of course, we know the CFR has recommended that we just extend our borders out to the borders of Canada and Mexico anyway, which would effectively make us one country.
Yeah.
So, riots and violence continue in the Middle East over, well, in Iraq specifically, over the blowing up of the Golden Dome in Samarra earlier this week.
And the story is so odd.
I wish I had paid more attention to it early on, because I didn't really catch the significance of it. And
well, you're the one told me about it. I knew that the name of the town sounded familiar for a couple of reasons, but I hadn't made this connection until you told me.
Well, and you as a PID listener are probably, you know, smarter than the average bear, so you probably already caught this before we did, but apparently this Golden Dome in Iraq, destroying it would... Like, here's an analogy that I read today, that somebody explained it. If you as a Christian had been taught from birth and had been taught for the last 1,400 years or 1,300 years that Jesus Christ's return could only take place at one specific location, just say for the sake of this argument, the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. Okay, just for the sake of argument. And somebody went and blew it up, how upset would you be? That's basically what's going on in Iraq right now, because this Golden Dome in Samarra is located right next to the place where the 12th Imam, the one who's promised to return as their savior, went into occlusion, into hiding, Allah has hidden him from the eyes of mankind until such time as he is needed to return and restore the world to righteousness. The Golden Dome is where his father, the 11th, and his grandfather, the 10th Imam, had been laid to rest. Their bones were buried there.
I think there may be two other prominent people in Islam that are married, buried there as well. Mm-hmm. It seems like one is a woman, which is quite an honor. If you go to Watcher Magazine, you will find that story along with a photograph, an image of that complex prior to the bombing. And it shows both domes, the Golden Dome, which was, of course, destroyed, essentially, and then the Blue Tile Dome, which is the one that the 12th Imam is in occultation.
Occultation, not occlusion.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, occultation.
So
Hayden is the
hidden Imam. This is really a significant deal for Shia Muslims.
That's
why they're so angry, because apparently not only was the golden domed mosque destroyed, basically, the blame has apparently been laid on the Sunni Muslims in Iraq. And that is the cause for this violence that's taking place there. There were something like 47 dead, bullet-riddled bodies that were discovered in Baghdad last night.
Yeah, and I think the number yesterday was about 100.
So
maybe 100 dead or 100 injured. 100 sticks in my mind. So clearly someone, perhaps the Sunnis, perhaps someone using the Sunnis, perhaps someone posing as Sunnis, is trying to foment a big civil war in Iraq, and
now,
not just Iraq.
Well, I was going to say, before we leave that topic, before we get too far removed from the events, think back to last September when those two British SAS, Special Forces soldiers, were arrested in Basra.
The very thing I was thinking of.
Yeah, by Iraqi officials dressed in Arab gear and carrying explosives. Mm-hmm. And they were charged with planning to set explosive charges. Now, if that's true, number one, why were they doing it? Number two, why were they dressed in traditional Arab garb to do it?
Right.
Number three, then, why did the British military feel that it was necessary to use tanks and armored personnel carriers to bust into the jail in Basra and break those guys out while, incidentally, setting free about 150 Iraqi prisoners? And then that story just got swept under the rug. Now, you may remember that story. We posted it, and we kind of played it up at Watcher Magazine. There was a very dramatic picture of a British soldier who was on fire. He'd been hit with a petrol bomb because the Iraqi citizens there were pretty upset that these guys were busting their fellow soldiers out of jail.
And, of course, that picture was splashed all over the British headlines, the papers the next day, and made the British people very angry and helped Tony Blair a lot.
Yeah, because they heard the side of the story that one of their guys was firebombed.
Because this happened during the height of Memogate, when Tony Blair was being lambasted.
The Downing Street memo.
Exactly.
So think now, who would benefit from a civil war between the Sunnis and the Shias in Iraq? Does it benefit us to have them fighting one another rather than working together against the occupying force? And I don't use that, you know.
Well, I think I would ask myself, who is the bigger population, the Shia or the Sunnis? Well,
it's
the Shia.
Right.
So,
and remember now, Saddam was a Sunni, and his ruling party was a Sunni.
Exactly.
They are the minority.
Exactly. So if the Shia get ticked off, then they might just join up with the Shia in Iran, and...
Well, that could be the trigger.
Squeeze play.
Yeah. Well, we talked about this before. I mean, what are we really doing over there? What is the United States' real goal over there? And what have we actually accomplished?
It's pretty complicated, actually.
It really is complicated. You can't go in and just assume that, hey, they're going to be open to the same type of government that we've enjoyed in the United States now for over 200 years, and just say, yeah, okay. You know, we're ready to... I had to laugh. I heard a sound clip today of President Bush saying the people of Iraq have spoken, they have voted, and they've said that they want democracy. Democracy? Now, again, no offense intended to our Muslim brothers and sisters, but Shia law is not exactly one that allows for a great deal of personal freedom.
Yeah. Is it Sharia law?
I'm sorry. Sharia law is not one that allows for a great deal of personal freedom, especially if you're a woman.
Right.
That's not what they voted for.
No.
George,
have you read that Constitution, George?
That's not what they voted for. Democracy is not what they have voted for. Or a representative republic, which is what we have, thank you very much.
Exactly. We do not have a democracy.
Yeah. So what we have done is we've gone over there, killed a bunch of people, have a bunch of our boys and girls died, and we've created Iran's new best friend.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think in many ways we have. But now we'll go on a little further, and we're going to have to get out of here soon. But the unrest is not just in Iraq.
No.
I said to you earlier that I was thinking of Russ Dizdar today because with all of the, it seems like, triggers going off here and there. We had Australia going off in December with the beach.
The riots on the beach in Sydney.
Oh, gosh, yes. And now we have Nigeria going nuts.
That is a weird situation.
Christian on Muslim.
Yeah.
They are burning each other.
Yeah, it really is ugly over there. Interesting that WorldNet Daily printed the story regarding the Muslims who attacked the Christians over the cartoon riots, but then you went and found the balancing story, which showed that Christians, and I put that in quote marks because Christians aren't supposed to kill.
That's right.
But there was a retaliation by nominal Christians that killed
non-Muslims.
Yeah, but killed even more than the Muslim attack.
Yeah, and that's what was going on in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
The supposed offense taken by the Aussie, you know, Christians or whatever, non-Muslim males, and it was, I mean, it was some nasty stuff. And as I remember, it was over. Was it an email message or a phone message? But it was some electronic signals that were being sent out that rise up, Muslim Brothers, or something like that.
Yeah. Well, it does really seem as though some signal has been given, and that some force behind the scenes is working to, you know, let you and him fight. I mean, we've got the cartoon intifada, we've got the sectional is not the word I'm looking for.
Sectarian
violence. Thank you. In Iraq.
Secretariat.
in Iraq, and we've got a coup, an attempted coup, apparently, in the Philippines.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff taking place right now, and behind the scenes, as these stories come in addition to earthquakes, landslides, you know, typhoons, all these things. Tornadoes in the middle of winter. There are spiritual forces at war, and that's the big thing that Derek and I really try to impress on everybody. Take a look at the headlines, but then ask yourself, what is behind it?
Right. And, you know, we're you know, we discuss these issues at the forum quite a bit, peeringintodarkness.com/forum, for this very purpose, because we do not profess to have any gift of omniscience, where we can see clearly what's going on here.
No.
We're just seeing what, you know, the shadows on the wall and trying to figure out the shape of the things casting those shadows. And all we can know for sure is what, you know, we have been told, which is that we're wrestling not against, you know, flesh and blood enemy, but against a spiritual enemy. And it is difficult to figure out what they're up to, because the forces that we face, the ones that are wrestling against us, are much older and much smarter than we are.
They are.
So their true intentions may be hidden behind several layers of misdirection. And so, you know, you try too hard to figure it out, and you can.
Brain explode.
wind up just chasing your own tail.
Java.
Yeah. And while it looks cute when you're a 3-pound puppy, as a full-grown adult, it does not oppress your coworkers or employer. So,
I was just picturing you do it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, on Friday afternoons, things are a little loose.
Oh, there, yeah, so, yeah. Casual Friday.
Yeah, yeah. But we pray for wisdom and guidance, and we just compare notes with you through this medium, which is why we started doing this podcast. And why we open up the forum for people to share ideas and exchange ideas, and just try to be guided in the right direction. Yeah. And of course, we know that the light of truth is the one revealed through the Holy Bible.
Amen.
So that's what's going on in the world as of today, Friday, February 24th. And Next week, we will, well, once again, peer into darkness. We have an interview recorded with Carl Schwartz regarding the use of depleted uranium in Afghanistan, Bosnia, Kosovo, Iraq, and the fallout, literal and political, the fallout that is being, well, the net result that our soldiers and the residents of those areas are going to live with for the rest of their lives, which sadly may be shortened because of their exposure to this stuff.
Now, don't forget next week's PIDcast, actually with our guest, Carl Schwartz. That starts on Wednesday morning, not on Tuesday night.
Right.
Because we did tell him that we would embargo that interview until the day that he's appearing with everybody else. It's just the only fair way to do it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We may have an extra one on Tuesday night for you, two blathers in a row, or
we may just hold it and upload it a little bit late after midnight that night. But yeah, Carl had agreed to do some live interviews with a couple of radio hosts, Maria Heller, who does a syndicated program, and then John Stadtmiller on the Republic Broadcasting Network. And rather than jump out early with our recorded interview, we are going to, you know, respect his request and their plans, and we'll hold off on that. But we've linked over this past week to a couple of articles of importance regarding this issue, and we hope you'll take a look at it. It has not entirely implausible. I mean, it did cross my mind that this whole flap about the ports issue might have been put out there to suck up all of the oxygen, as the saying goes, from this DU story, because this story about depleted uranium did hit the English press last weekend, but it got no traction at all over here in the U.S.
Isn't that amazing? I don't even know how much traction it got over there, to be honest.
Not much. It seemed to be a, sort of a tempest in a teacup. People took the explanations offered by the ministry spokesman there for the government. There's no way that this could have blown up here. Well, yeah, but you guys get sand blown up there from the Sahara. I mean, are you telling us that these micro-sized dust particles from Iraq couldn't have made it there? It's, that makes no sense.
By the way, Monday, March the 6th is our anniversary show.
Oh, that's right.
It's 1 year officially.
Yeah.
That we will have been doing this PIDcast. It's morphed and grown and all kinds of things. Grown, GROWNOAN. We may we'll have to figure out something special to do on that day.
A clip show. I remember that as though it were yesterday.
You can use those cool special effects on GarageBand.
That's right.
Well, in the meanwhile, I'm Sharon Gilbert, and I'm so glad that you guys have been there with us for nearly a year. Send us a note at radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
And until Monday, I'm Derek Gilbert.
As I said, I'm Sharon Gilbert, and there's... there are the dogs on the floor. They'd say hi, but they're sleeping now, so we must tiptoe quietly out of here. Everybody have a great evening, and thanks for listening.
Bye-bye. Gonna step up to the microphone.